This is Greater LA on KCRW, the show that connects you to the people and places of Southern California. Hey there, I'm Steve Chiatakis, and we start today under the 405 freeway, where Sepulveda meets Venice Boulevard. On a weekday morning, people emerge from tents at a small encampment. They head around the corner where public health workers are doing a workshop on how to use Narcan. That's a device that revives people who overdose on opioids.
Okay, so we roll them on their side, right? We do the recovery position so they're not in their own vomit. If you guys have to leave,
one attendee, Tyler, who declined to share his last name, stands off to the side. He's slowly eating a bag of crackers. His eyes are barely open. He's nodding off. He tells reporter Jesse Hardman that he took a hit of fentanyl. That's a synthetic opioid that's 50 to 100 times stronger than heroin.
When is the last time you used it?
This morning.
Yeah.
A lot of people like smoke it and shoot it. I prefer both, actually.
Tyler says he remembers the first time he tried fentanyl, more than a year ago.
And I remember I was actually with somebody and they OD'd, like right around the corner right here. That was the first time I did it, and I was like, holy I need some more of that. That's the first thing I thought.
And since then, it's been pretty much all fentanyl all the time, says Tyler. He says it gives him a high that feels like winning the lottery twice. But Tyler's odds of a fatal overdose have risen by as much as 25% during COVID, according to California state health officials. The reason for that are fewer health workers on the streets and COVID-related displacement and isolation. But that reporter, Jesse Hardman, found that COVID also has paved the way for some breakthroughs on countering the rise of fentanyl in Los Angeles.
Herman Lamas looks a little bit like an insurance salesman with his close-cropped haircut, wire-frame glasses, and no-nonsense approach. He's carrying a duffel bag as he makes his way around Echo Park Lake.
Community health worker, does anybody need any medication?
His bag isn't filled with insurance brochures. It's stuffed with Narcan and clean needles. He's an outreach worker with the LA County Department of Health Services. Lama stares at the ground as he makes his way along the lake.
I'm looking for foil paper. I'm looking for lighters. I'm looking for needles.
All signs of opioid and other drug use. After about 10 minutes, he finds what he's looking for.
Good morning, community health workers. Hey, anybody need any needles or Narcan? Okay, great. I got some. You need to come out for it.
Two men emerge from the tent. One of them's nodding off, a sign of opioid use. The other guy says he and his girlfriend have been talking about kicking their opioid habit. Lamas disappears into the tent.
I just take your information.
Yeah.
I'm going to call it to the local pharmacy.
Lamas spends most of his mornings ducking into strangers' tents around L.A. Very little surprises him now, including what he just saw at Echo Park Lake.
I was in the tent, and I was looking at the gal, and she had abscesses. And I asked her, how long have you had that? Because it looked like an old wound. She says, I had it for a month, and it's still scabbing. So it's just to heal and to recover, that process takes a lot longer now.
Lama says opioids weaken immune systems, and users are often oblivious to some of the ways their bodies are breaking down. He's pleased with the outcome today. The couple gave him medical history info and said they were interested in treatment.
And so this is a good start, you know, just to sign him up, bring him the medication.
When he says medication, he's talking about a unique drug that seems to have a real impact on opioid users.
I call her the queen. That is buprenorphine.
As an emergency room doctor at LA County USC Medical Center, Rebecca Trotsky's become quite familiar with the drug buprenorphine, also known as Suboxone.
It is a medication that stabilizes the part of the brain that goes up and down and up and down and up and down when people use opioids, and it just provides kind of an easy, calm part to that brain.
Trotsky says buprenorphine can make some opioid users feel like their old selves within minutes. And that's unique in the drug treatment world. There's no equivalent for, say, meth users. Getting buprenorphine normally requires visiting a doctor in person, But just getting to a hospital can be a barrier for some opioid users. And if they do make it, waiting in a line for hours for care can also be a hurdle.
And in those number of hours, somebody who uses heroin quite frequently will go into withdrawal while waiting to talk to a doctor about how to manage their withdrawal.
But the pandemic gave Dr. Trotsky a window of opportunity to streamline access to buprenorphine. Protecting healthcare workers and patients now means going online and fewer requirements to actually physically see a doctor in order to get a prescription. Trotsky can meet patients where they're at, wherever that might be.
We're able to leverage some of the technological innovations, like, hey, we can just call people and use the thing called a phone to make a visit.
Trotsky started a system where a team of public health outreach workers, including Herman Lamas, connect with opioid users. They get some basic info, call in to Trotsky or one of her colleagues, they speak with the patient, evaluate them, and set up the prescription. Then Lamas picks it up and delivers it. That's how Lamas met 30-year-old Stephen Humer a few months ago, at that same encampment under the 405, where Venice meets Sepulveda. Humer remembers it this way.
Herman said, hey, man, I can get you on the Suboxone right now. And that's the first time I ever heard that. I heard other people say, yeah, I can get you on Suboxone, but you have to go through this lengthy process. This is the first time anyone told me that I can get it on the spot.
That very morning, Humer had taken a hit of fentanyl around 4 a.m. He says Herman Lamas came calling around the tents around 6 a.m. They connected and...
I had my prescription by 1 o'clock.
Not only did Lamas get Humer a prescription in a matter of hours, he helped him check into a COVID quarantine hotel in Pasadena, where he was able to keep taking buprenorphine, get healthy, and a few weeks later, check into a rehab center. I asked him if he thought COVID saved him.
Yeah, I've been thinking about that a lot. Yeah, I did. If COVID wasn't around that day, I would just have a prescription on my side to have when I wasn't using. But since COVID was there and I had to go to quarantine, I didn't have access to go use drugs. I was in quarantine because I was away from all that stuff. So COVID did save me.
When COVID first hit California, Stephen Humer was in jail for opioid possession. The latest twist in a path that started when he stole some of his mom's painkillers at the age of 16. When he got released from jail last spring, he headed for Venice and soon was using fentanyl. Humer says he saw two people die from overdoses during his time under the 405.
Yeah, they stopped breathing and we had to administer Narcan. We had to administer CPR. One of them turned purple.
Humer confirms fentanyl is everywhere in L.A. now, and often in every kind of drug. Luckily, there's an antidote for some users, buprenorphine. And Humer says he's still taking it every day. He's working with a doctor to hopefully wean himself off it over the next month. But there's another part of his recovery he plans to stick with. He still talks to Herman Lamas on the phone every week. For KCRW, I'm Jesse Hardman.
Introducing the KCRW donation car, designed to be recycled. This first-of-its-kind vehicle will save you time, space, and hassle by disappearing. Enjoy the luxury and comfort of turning your underused car into a donation worth hundreds, even thousands of dollars. The KCRW donation car, already in your garage, driveway, or on cinder blocks outside your house. Act now at kcrw.com/cars.
Onward now with Greater LA on KCRW. I'm Steve Chiotakis. We tend to think of LA as cars and freeways, endless mini malls and suburbs, and millions of people, an urban wilderness. Not, you know, a real wilderness. But of course, we've got plenty of real wilderness too, right in the middle of the city. In fact, Los Angeles boasts the largest urban national park in the world. It's called the Santa Monica Mountains National Recreation Area, and it covers more than 150,000 acres from Griffith Park to Malibu and points north into Ventura County. It boasts an incredible diversity of wildlife, 500 miles of hiking trails, And if Burbank Congressman Adam Schiff has his way, it's going to more than double in size. Because though he may be better known these days for spearheading the impeachment effort against President Donald Trump, for two decades now, Adam Schiff has been working on something called the Rim of the Valley Corridor Preservation Act. We're going to talk some politics later in our conversation, but Congressman Schiff joins us now to talk about this Preservation Act. Welcome, sir.
Thank you. It's great to be with you.
We're talking about a big, complicated project, obviously, but can you give us an idea of where this new parkland would be if the Rim of the Valley Preservation Act were to, say, make it into law?
I'd be happy to. As you point out, this has been a very long-term project. About 18 years ago, I introduced a bill to study whether we should expand the size of the Santa Monica Mountains Recreation Area, which was established in the 1970s when LA was a certain size, but it has grown enormously since then. It's one of the most utilized parks in the world, and we want to try to expand it if we're going to preserve all the wonderful wildlife that inhabits this park. And over the years, we got that bill passed, we got the region studied, and the recommendation from the Department of Interior was to double the size of the park. And so we now have introduced a bill to make it so. And this will help us preserve, you know, the habitat for those wonderful mountain lions around us, for the rare Mediterranean chaparral, for all the recreational opportunities, for the opportunities for hiking and just getting out of the hustle and bustle. I think, you know, given the pandemic, people have appreciated getting back to nature even more. And so this is a really important opportunity that we don't want to miss.
How is it handled now? So if we're talking 150,000 acres right now, and you want to double it in size. What's on that land now? We know there are mountain lions and a lot of biodiversity and things like that, but what does preservation actually mean?
What it means is that those beautiful open spaces will be there for future generations of Angelenos to enjoy, for our kids and grandkids. That it won't be simply the product of sprawl and development and disappear, and with it all that nature that so, you know, binds, I think, the people to this region. Yes, people came here for the jobs and they came here for the opportunity, but they stayed here because of the quality of life, because they could really have both. They could have good economic opportunity and still find ample nature just down the street with coyotes coming down the block, with a P-22 that we've all gotten to know, the wonderful mountain lion who spends much of their time in Griffith Park. And we want to preserve those opportunities and expand them and make sure that we can bring to bear park resources to do that. And by doubling size of the park, we can accomplish all of those objectives.
You mentioned the mountain lions living over in the mountains in the recreation area, because, I mean, it's amazing. Right in the middle of an urban area, we've got big cats roaming around. They need a lot of range to live in, right? But there is a problem for them, because we have freeways all over the place, and you mentioned the urban sprawl. How does the act help with that issue, with these big cats?
Well, it helps preserve these wildlife corridors that are so vital to those magnificent creatures. There are plans within an expanded park, for example, to do underpasses so that wildlife can pass under those freeways instead of what happens now, where we have these tragic accidents where people will collide with a mountain lion and kill it or risk hurting themselves. You know, I have to tell you that it's a great joy for me when I meet with some of my fellow parliamentarians who come from the African continent and tell me about, you know, their districts and their wildlife and the lions that live in their districts. And I'm proud to say, well, you know, I've got lions living in my district too. And of course, they look at me with some incredulity until I show them the photographs.
The House actually passed this act back in February, so nearly a year ago. California's two senators introduced a companion bill in the Senate. Where do things stand now?
You know, it passed out of the Senate Resources Committee with bipartisan support. It passed in the House, as you point out, earlier in the year with bipartisan support. The challenge is getting it taken up on the Senate floor and passed on the Senate floor. And we're working hard on that. We're looking at creative ways to try to get it done before the end of the session. But look, I've been at this now for 18 years. I'm not going to stop until it's done. And we will keep working on it until we succeed.
I would be remiss if I didn't ask you about what's happening today, which is COVID-19. And A lot of people are suffering. People are out of work. How close are we to seeing another COVID relief package passed?
I think we're very close. I think, frankly, we're closer than we have been in months. As you know, the House passed the HEROES Act probably now 5 months ago, and it languished on Mitch McConnell's desk for months and months until so many of the existing provisions expired and people were thrown off their unemployment compensation and small businesses no longer had the support of the PPP program. I think we're finally getting them to come back to the table, and there was a bipartisan compromise offered, which I think we should embrace, improve upon if we can, but we need to get moving. We need to get help out now. And I'm pretty optimistic that we will, within the next week to 10 days, get to yes and get help to people who are unemployed with more unemployment compensation, help to small businesses through the PPP program with a new infusion of funds, help for state and local government to continue to provide emergency services and avoid massive layoffs. So I think that there is help on the way, but it's not a done deal.
The politics is pretty bonkers right now, Congressman, as you know. President Trump lost his reelection bid by at least 7 million votes and counting. He and other Republicans keep claiming without any evidence that he really did win and that thousands upon thousands of ballots were illegally cast. The courts obviously haven't agreed with them, but just yesterday on Fox, your colleague in the House, Representative Mo Brooks, a Republican from Alabama, said he is going to challenge the Electoral College vote in the House come January. What do you say to that and to those who say this election was somehow rigged?
Well, you can say that you're the emperor of the world. It doesn't make it so. You can say that there was massive fraud in the election, and that doesn't make that so. And in fact, every case that has looked into it has found that there's no basis to these claims by the president and his acolytes. And to have the president still making them, to have the president calling electors and calling state legislators and effectively asking them to overturn the election, and to have people like my colleague in Congress who are saying they should challenge the seating of electors, it's the most anti-democratic thing I've ever seen. It's the strongest resistance, I think, in our nation's history to a peaceful transition of power. And I just don't understand the willingness to do such damage to our democracy. And for what? For this cult around the president, this cult of personality around the president that my colleagues seem to be so in the thrall of.
Can it work, though? I mean, what if it were to work?
It won't work. It won't work. But it will succeed in engendering doubt among millions of the president's supporters. It will succeed in engendering a sense of betrayal. And that will only contribute to, some long-lasting disharmony in the country and a loss of faith and confidence in our system of government, and all in the name of Donald Trump. I would have thought more of my colleagues than to engage in this kind of demagoguery.
Congressman Adam Schiff, who represents Burbank in the House of Representatives. Congressman, thanks for taking time out today.
You bet. Thank you.
Moving on now with Greater LA on KCRW, I'm Steve Chiatakis. Today, some big, big news from our radio station. KCRW announcing the long-awaited news that there will be two new co-hosts of our morning flagship music show called Morning Becomes Eclectic. Novena Carmel and Anthony Valadez will helm the seat. I don't know how they're both going to fit in the seat, but they will, left vacant by Jason Bentley last year when he left. And to ring in the news, Novena and Anthony are with us right now. Both of them, congratulations to you.
Thanks, Steve. Appreciate that.
Thank you, Steve, so much.
Novena, you've been a DJ with the radio station for a little while now. You're still one of our newest members. You've been here for a couple of years with us, right? But how are you going into this as far as, your musical tastes and what you plan on bringing to Morning Becomes Eclectic?
Yeah, so I've been a DJ for about 2 years at KCRW, and I've been DJing for a little longer than that. I've always loved so many different styles of music. If someone were to ask me, what's your favorite style? I just can't possibly name them. I mean, I started off listening to classical music and jazz and dancing in the living room, as many of us do, to our parents' record collection, which was like Guns N' Roses, you know, Aretha Franklin. And then I got my first tapes, and it was Faith No More and Vanilla Ice and MC Hammer. And I honestly, I love so many different styles of music, and I feel like Morning becomes eclectic. With that word, eclectic is the best place to share all the styles that I love. And I also find that I learn about new music from the listeners, because people are always requesting songs that I've never heard of, or they're giving me little fun facts that I didn't know about an artist or a bass player on the song. So it's just such a fun way to flex my already deep love for music.
You both obviously are bringing a lot to KCRW and diverse musical taste and things like that. Anthony, you just heard what Novena said. You probably, you know, you and I have talked about music before, not only on this show, but, you know, we've worked together for many years now. Do you see any of that? You know, I mean, is she going to open your eyes to some musical choices? And are you going to open her eyes to some of your musical choices? How is that all going to work? And do we need to, you know, do we need to bring in like a psychologist or someone to help out in that regard?
Not at all. I mean, I think when you tune in.
Definitely, regardless.
Not true. Fake news. I feel like when you listen to Morning Becomes Eclectic, you're going to listen to two friends kind of playing records together and making discoveries together. And I'd love to touch on what Novena said, the fact that, you know, a lot of times I play a record and someone is like, hey, that's a sample from this song. And then I'm able to get that song, and I'm able to learn through my audience. So it's going to be Novena and I and listeners just hanging out, playing records every morning. It's going to be a hang, and I'm excited about that.
Playing records. Remember back in the day? I mean, we're not playing records now. Everything's on your phone or whatever, you know, wherever you get it. It's just instantaneous, right? It's not just playing records, but that's essentially what Morning Becomes Eclectic is, right? I mean, it's about sharing your musical tastes.
Exactly. And musical experiences.
Absolutely. Musical taste, discovery, new music, old music, learning from the listeners, connecting with people. I mean, it's kind of, I also find it's not just about sharing the music. It's like how we connect through the music as well, especially these days when folks are sort of, you know, more isolated from each other.
Also, the importance of connecting dots. One of the things that I love about being on KCRW is my ability to connect hip-hop to samba, to soul, to funk. Everything's connected, and I think there's a parallel there with our community. You know, we are all connected, and the music translates into community, and so I'm excited about that.
What are y'all most looking forward to in your tenure?
Go ahead. You go first, Novena.
I'm just looking forward to, as I said from the first time I was interviewed, is bringing joy into everybody's day. That's just kind of something I embody and live by as a person. So as much joy I can transfer to folks through music and conversation, the better. And that will fill me up.
Yeah, I'm excited to play records that we all love, and to wake up with Los Angeles, and to wake up with you, and to wake up with the KCRW community, and just, you know, try to insert some positive energy into what's happening. And I think we all need that, and we all love music, and we all need it. So I'm grateful for that.
What's the song you want to take us out on?
So Fresh and So Clean, Outkast. How about that?
You like that, Novena?
Ooh, that's a good one. I am feeling so fresh and so clean today, and looking forward to being fresh and clean every day with all of the listeners.
Starting in mid-January, I'm looking forward to hearing you both. I'm so excited. Congratulations, y'all, and thanks for joining us.
Thanks, Steve. Appreciate it.
Exciting news for sure. Again, they start their gig mid-January, so stay tuned for that. That's going to do it for us today. We are fresh and clean back tomorrow, searching for holiday joy amid a pandemic and stay-at-home orders. We're going to talk about that. Check us out online at kcrw.com/greaterLA. Tell us how you're doing. Tell us what you're doing and your thoughts about the holidays. And please, please stay safe. Stay at home as much as you can. Listen to us anytime by subscribing to the podcast wherever you get your podcasts. Jenna Cagle, Angel Carrera, Sonia Geis, Mario Diaz, Ray Guarna, Phil Richards, Mario Saavedra, Amy Ta, Mike Stark, and Christian Bordahl all made the show happen this evening. I'm Steve Chiatakis. Have a great night.